talking so fast you can run his podcast at 0.5. Results are conclusive, just know that he argues both sides. His GM is a shadow of his former self. Doppelganger Steph, the GM and the shadow, playing games only they know. Gavin Bugs of Onanto, the GM and the
Welcome everyone to episode 41 of the Shadow of the GM podcast. First off, an amazing special thank you to TJ Drennan for that new theme tune. I've been waiting a long time for a TJ Drennan theme tune, and I'm absolutely amazed at what he's managed to produce for me. Hopefully you all enjoy it. I might do a little bit of tweaking around to make maybe some outro music from it as well, or just like a quick outro piece from it. But for now, thought I'd stick it in the intro just so you can only hear the amazingness that is TJ Drennan's work. So as I said in the show notes, this and the name, this episode is about my part four of my Caravan to Ainaris episode, talking a bit about how that went and also a bit more about GURPS combat, because we did a proper combat session in that episode, and talk about the stuff that I did wrong in general and hopefully that no one noticed. But, you know, I shall be honest and admit it to you guys on here. So without any further waiting, let's get into Ainaris part four. So at the end of part three of the Ainaris adventure that I'm running, we actually stopped just before combat broke out. The party were on a bit of a side mission and they met some people who they decided they wanted to fight rather than give up money, because they're basically trying to rob them. They could have afforded to do it because they had spending money, but one of the characters said they wouldn't give them a receipt. So they felt they needed to make sure they had a receipt or, you know, fight their way through it. It was quite entertaining that that was the reason behind it. But, you know, they did do some checks and did realize that people were probably up to something nefarious. And although the money isn't theirs, they still decide to have a bit of combat. There was a good amount of trying to negotiate around it. One of the characters in the party is a pacifist, so he was trying to find peaceful solutions to it quite desperately, which didn't manage to happen in the end, and he did stay out of the fighting for the most part. So it was just quite a good role-playing from him. Anyone that's talked about GURPS has always kind of implied that the combat would be slow and there's lots of tactical crunchiness, etc. It has to be said that we ran a combat with six players and four opponents, and we finished it in about 20-25 minutes. So I felt they actually ran fairly quickly and fairly smoothly. Things I did realise when I was playing it, or sort of just afterwards I played it, that there's a couple of things I messed up. So let's talk about those. So one of the things that you get in GURPS is that if you take an injury, well, there's a couple of things about injuries. So one is that if you take damage, you suffer what's known as shock. So if you take some hit points and damage, that applies to a negative modifier to your sort of active attack and skill rolls and things in the next round. So if you try and attack someone, if you take 2 points of damage last round, this round you're at -2 to hit, or rather next time you go to attack, you're at -2. Might be the same round, depending on your initiative order. As it happened, one of the players took some damage, and I forgot about this rule. They also actually took a major wound, which is more than half the hit points, so they should have also had a knockdown roll, which I also forgot about. But to be fair, in the grand scheme of things, it wasn't a massive difference. The thing is, I think it was enough to see that character taking quite a lot of damage was enough kind of add that element of risk to the game. The shock thing didn't really matter when I look back at the rolls and roll 20. They missed anyway in the next attack, so it wasn't like it was a huge kind of difference to how the game ran. It's just one of those things as a GM I kind of have to pay a bit more attention to. I did wonder a bit about the initiative order, if that would be a big thing with any players, because your initiative doesn't move in GURPS, it's based on your speed. But to be honest, the combat just randomly ran through it and nobody really seemed to be bothered about it. One of the players was using a bow and arrow. So again, this came up in one game previously where I played, where there's some comments about how long it takes. But this character did have the fast draw skill. They failed it the first time, but they made it the second time. So they were able to get a few hours off during the combat, it has to be said. I think they managed to fire at least two, if not maybe three. So again, we actually moved fairly quickly through the turn orders and stuff. Again, some of the comments about the active attacking and defending making the game a bit whiffy. There was maybe a small element to that a couple of times, but actually generally speaking, the opponents they were fighting rolled horribly in the combat. So actually, they didn't do a very good job of defending themselves, which kind of matches what I felt would happen. I mean, I say horribly. Your active defenses are a lot lower than your attacks. So in actual fact, it is quite common to fail it with the level of skill these opponents had. It's more common that they fail to parry, etc., than they do succeed on parrying and things. So that kind of played out a little bit in the combat and how it went. Again, some of it was down to what the rolls actually came out. So there was a fair amount of actual hitting going on, which I felt was quite good. The huge oversized barbarian did a very good job of taking someone out with practically one attack, which was awesome to see. So it was a bit of a fluke, to be fair, but it kind of matched that sort of character's ethos, so it seemed really quite good. So that being said, that ran quite well, and I feel the combat runs a lot more smoothly. I definitely think it's a case of the more you run it and the more you get used to those intricacies of GURPS combat, the more it'll kind of fade into the background. There isn't a huge amount of messing about with the rules, really, once you get going. To be fair, we aren't using hit locations, but again, I think once we get used to it, we could add those in and it wouldn't slow the sessions down. The main thing is about me trying to remember things like shock and knockdown, etc., and things like crippling injuries to body parts if you start doing those things. But again, those are things I can act on as we go. The armor stuff went fairly smoothly, as did the damage multipliers, because I just kind of know most of them in my head now because I've done it a few times, so that doesn't tend to slow the game down. It helps that a couple of the players do sort of understand the rules a bit, so one of them's quite good at knowing about the retreat to defense, where you can take a step backwards and it adds a bonus to your dodge, but you have to move back. So they even recommended that to one of the players, so he found that quite useful to be able to do that. So it was quite good, sort of seeing that happen in the party, sort of helping each other out a bit by explaining some of the rules, which was the whole point of the session, is that getting the players to learn it so they understand the sort of things they can do. And so when we carry on playing in the future, we all know the game a bit better. So that was really kind of good from the combat point of view. Then the main thing I wanted to mention was about messing up the adventure a little bit. It wasn't a major thing. So there's been a few times in the game where the players have gone very much off what the adventure says. Now, as I'd like to hope that as a fairly seasoned GM, I'm able to kind of ad-lib that stuff and not really be too obvious. So there's a couple of things they did when they're doing the sort of trek across a desert sidetrack, which it didn't really tell you how to handle in the adventure, because, you know, pre-written adventures don't tell you how to handle things when players use their own ingenuity or do stuff you wouldn't expect them to do, etc. And I'm very much led by what the players are doing and how successful I feel it would be, regardless of what the adventure says. There's one thing in the traveling across the desert, for example, early on, where they were supposed to definitely get, they encounter sort of roll like random events, and one of them is that they would definitely get lost because something that happened. However, they managed to very proactively and very cleverly head off that situation as it started to evolve. And I felt railroading into that by saying, no, this still happens anyway, and the person still does this, and blah, 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 would have been very much the wrong thing to do, because it wasn't just a case of them trying feebly to do something or giving a token effort. They actually really, really came up with some very clever ideas, and really, because we'd worked out this NPC's kind of motivations a bit and some of their fears and things, I felt like, wow, they really kind of got this person's number. So unable to manipulate them the way they did, plus with the roles and stuff, it made sense that they would be able to work their way around the situation. So I'd never want players to feel like they're being railroaded by blocking off those ingenuity and stuff. I feel like, you know, if they're able to do those things and, you know, pull them off very much in an in-character way as well, it makes kind of sense. So that's kind of happened there. So that wasn't so bad. In this session, there was a bit where I'd forgotten what they were supposed to be doing on a certain aspect of the mission. I won't say too much in case you listen to this and also don't spoil the spoilers. And actually, it was meant to be like an extra bit afterwards, and they weren't supposed to have something they had. But apart from anything else, it sped the whole sort of game up a little bit, rather than kind of drag it out. I did feel when I read it, as I sort of noticed it as we moved on, that to have made it different would have really kind of just added an unnecessary layer of back and forth and messing about and things, and it didn't really seem to be necessary. And it was quite interesting then for them to do what they were going to do anyway. Again, this is all very cryptic, but hopefully there was a little bit that might have tipped off that maybe I'd said something the first time or misremembered something and they might remember it more. But, you know, I think I kind of hopefully seamlessly did over it, so they were able to carry on and do the mission, not realize which bit I messed up. So we'll have to see. But again, some very clever ingenuity in the party. They managed to avoid combat. They did the right thing you'd expect in GURPS, which was they came across some people and they realized by a bit of stealth and ingenuity looking around that the amount of people they were facing was quite significant. And if anyone knows how deadly GURPS is, if you're outnumbered or even if the numbers are equal, it's not always a good idea to fight. And they chose to, like, you know, take the chance on not having a combat encounter. They were clever about it, though. They were clever to make sure they did cover their bases a bit and had a bit of a surprise up their own sleeves, but they didn't decide to do some sort of suicidal death charge you sometimes get in games like D&D, where, you know, players feel a bit invincible because of how their characters are, etc. They played it the way I feel should run a bit more realistically if you're playing something like GURPS, where I think they realized that, you know, trying to play it mostly straight was a better option to save having the risk of all being murdered, basically. So that seemed to go really, really well. So like I said, hopefully one of those things is that being messing up a little bit, but hopefully not really letting the players get in on it. It's one of those things, I think, when you run as a GM, and, you know, I think if you can mess up with confidence, it works better. It's like, you know, there is a danger sometimes you make a mess and you realize and you get a bit flustered by it that the players will notice, and that kind of breaks the flow. I think if you can smooth over stuff you've got wrong or find some way to make it work, and it's very much like improvising and thinking on your feet. And so hopefully I did that effectively. It didn't come across really when I realized I messed up something a little bit. The end of the session, we ended on a bit of a random cliffhanger. We always do random sort of cliffhangers all the time in this one. So we ended up running the session a bit extra long because really getting into the role-playing aspect of it, and there's a bit of something going on between the daughter of the person who's hired them and one of the characters, and there's a very interesting interplay going on between what that person wants, what the player character is trying to do, and what the father is wanting and stuff. And again, this is something that's come, it's not in the options. So the game, as most pre-written adventures have, it talks about what might happen in the scene and what it expects to happen. And this player's thrown in a bit of a curveball completely out of left field. And again, through some of the roleplay and stuff and some of the stuff they've brought in, which again is actually quite reasonable, might really kind of work. It is kind of fitting in a little bit. So we'll wait and see how that transpires. It will be interesting because there's some stuff that the players don't realise it will have some impact on. So if you listen to this, wait for that, guys, when that comes out. You'll wait and see. But I now have to work out what the actions of those NPCs will be for next session as to what's potentially going to happen, because I know the character NPCs' motivations and what they're going to try and do, and also what they're thinking, as well as what the players are thinking, potentially what the players are thinking. So I have to transpire as to how that's all going to kind of mesh into the situation. So next session should be interesting from a very sort of role-playing point of view. I think there's probably a couple of sessions left in this adventure before they kind of reach the natural end of it. It might be longer. I don't think it'll be less, depending on how much time they take to complete certain things. But there's a few kind of encounters along the way before the caravan reaches its endpoint that they have to complete. So it'll depend a little bit on how much role-playing, etc. goes on at those points as to how many it goes to. But I think at least two more sessions, possibly three, and then we shall look at where the future of the game goes. So there we go. That was Iron Arras Part 4. That is it for episode 41. Again, a special thanks to TJ Drennan for the introduction music. My only hope is that I can somehow keep the production standards of the rest of the podcast equal to the music. Probably not, but I'll not stress too much about it. I'll just do my best. And, you know, it'd be nice to get a better headset, microphone, whatever, and record the sound quality a bit better. But, you know, I'll do my best anyway to match the standard now set by my intro. As always, if you have any comments or questions about this episode, please go to anchor.fm/GMShadow to find my podcast. You can leave a message, voice message to Anchor if you sign up to Anchor. You don't have to make your own podcast. Just sign up from there and you can send me one. You can send me a message, either a voice message or an email at gmshadow@hotmail.com. And you can also find me on Twitter @GMShadow. So until next time, everyone, we might talk a bit more about GURPS or Iron Arras. Keep on gaming.